This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to episode 234 of the Washed Up Emo podcast. I am Tom Mullen from washedupemo.com. Today in the podcast is a massive announcement in the 15, 16 plus years of Washed Up Emo. This morning I launched a book publishing company called Washed Up Books. That's washedupbooks.com. And after two volumes of the anthology of emo, I really felt there was more to do in this space. And because of your support, it is time to make this thing real. So today I am proud to announce Red Letter Days, the debut novel from Matt Prior from the Get Up Kids, New Amsterdams, and Terrible Twos. Today it's available for pre-order via washedupbooks.com. It's available worldwide. So wherever you are in the world, you can order this, washedupbooks.com or polyvinylrecords.com. I thought it'd be fun to recap the releases of Anthology of Emo and how we got to doing Red Letter Days with the designer, Jesse Reed. His day job is order. He has a book series called Standards Manual, and he's in an amazing band called Shark Swimmer, where he is the drummer, and it will make sense as you hear the episode. Jesse was invaluable to making this a reality, and we go into the story about how we started doing books and how we dove into books and music and how he used to come to the emo nights back in the day. This is really overwhelming to have happen. So it's amazing to think that someone like Matt Prior that I idolized has put pen to paper and wrote an amazing series of stories that I've been waiting to tell you for so long. So truly, thank you for the support in the podcast and the recent books, and hopefully you dig Red Letter Days. So shout out to everyone that helped make the anthologies happen, Polyvinyl Records, Ian King, so many others, and the future of what we do next. So thank you to everyone. This is just the start of Washed Up Books. So this is episode 234, the Washed Up Emo podcast, talking about Washed Up Books and the new release by Matt Prior entitled Red Letter Days. So pre-order at washedupbooks.com or polyvinylrecords.com. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
This isn't it.
I mean, it is crazy to talk to you now with Washed Up Books, like having a release that's not anthology. So it kind of seems like a whirlwind, even though the first anthology came out in 2017. Do you remember? I mean, I think I remember the story about how we got connected, and like, it's probably been washed away from me, but do you remember, was it a mutual friend that told you about Washed Up?
I mean, it was the emo nights. So somehow I got to one of those, and I'm pretty sure like the first one that I went to, which was the one that like you had to go downstairs. It was like in the East Village.
Idle Hands.
Yeah. So that's definitely the first one I came to. I went alone, so I didn't even go with anyone, but someone must have told me about it. And I didn't know anything about you or who you were. I was just purely going because they're like, yeah, you should go to this emo night. They play like all your music. And then like I walk in and Brand New is playing, and just like everyone's like, the entire bar is singing along. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? So that was amazing. And then I think then you started doing them at, it used to be called No Name Bar. Now it's A Bar in Greenpoint. And I think that's when again, I don't know, maybe like our friend Isaac, Isaac Daniels, like he's like a diehard Emo Night fan. I think he went to every single one. Mm-hmm. He's a graphic designer. Maybe he spoke to you and then spoke to me, and just like, I had this other design friend, he works at this place, Pentagram. And I think I heard like you knew what that was. And then basically I think I came up and just introduced myself at one of the No Name A Bar nights. And so that's how I at least learned about you, and then eventually Washed Up, and the rest is history. But it all did start from Emo Nights.
That's so cool. I'd forgotten that part. I had thought it was someone saying like, oh, I know this book designer, but you had come to the nights prior to that.
And like maybe just said what's up to you, or just like introduced myself, and then you're like, oh, we should talk. Like, I don't know if you had ideas for the anthology at that point, but I feel like you had ideas for stuff, and you're like, I want to talk to you about like some like design things. And maybe it was just felt around like the Washed Up branding. And so that's what In-N-Out Isaac did that. So
you're right. You're okay. Yeah. So yeah. So Isaac, who, if anyone's on the website or sees anything on washedupemo.com, like that was all, Isaac. And then I do remember some street where I probably had gobbledygook ideas, which you have to sit through when you talk to me sometimes, is about like, I want to do a book. And I feel like I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I think I kind of maybe had some of the inklings of what ended up being anthology, of it being serious and not being a joke. That was all my recollection at the moment. Like, do you remember anything else?
No, that sounds right. The timeline is a little, fuzzy, but I think that was basically it. And then, I probably showed you my work, or the work that we do at Order, and then the standards manual books, and
which I had already bought. I already had the NASA one, and I didn't get the MTA one. It was just the NASA one just blew me away. So I remember even having that. So probably when you came up, did you have that out by the time we talked?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
because that came out in like 2015, I think.
So I bought as soon as I bought that when it came out. So that's so funny. So because you must have come up to me, and then I was like, oh no, I already know who you are. Like, I was like, I already know what this is.
Yeah, I think once I described like what I've done or what I've worked on, you're like, oh yeah, for sure. You must have, mentioned or brought up the ideas about doing a book and like sort of printing the interviews. And I do remember sort of like what you just said, like immediately I thought you need to do a serious looking book and not do this cliche Hot Topic looking like broken heart illustration, skulls and crossbones and whatever, like, sort of like cliche emo looking stuff. And like, let's do a real almost academic approach to a book on the emo genre and the musicians and all the interviews that you've done. So I think we were both like on the same page pretty immediately about the approach of doing an anthology.
Yeah, I thought that made me so comfortable. I do remember after that being like, oh man, like I don't like, because whenever I explain emo, right, there's like a confusion. I have to explain something. And like for you, I was like, I think you sort of got what I was going for. And especially, if we fast forward to the first anthology, I mean, that was a journey because I was at work. I was trying to, do my podcast. I knew I wanted to do this book. I'd never known. And you kind of really baby stepped me, because I was like very confused, like, because I knew the music world. I knew how to put out a record, and being able to like have you explain this like book stuff. And I just remember, I had so much doubt. Like, I was like, what am I doing? Like, this doesn't even make sense. Like, why is this this? Like, it. So I just think your patience was something that helped me so much, because I just had no idea what I was doing with that first one.
Yeah. I mean, hell yeah. And like, we didn't know what we were doing with our first standards manual book. So I sort of had already gone through the first book, baby steps, and like learning the learning curve and making mistakes, or just, just then like knowing what the process is and like how to do it. So yeah, that was a fun first project for me and you.
And then I remember, having it come out, or having the pre-order up. And I forget if you texted me or if it was Polyvinyl sending us a note of being like, yeah, we're already at like this number within like a, I forget what it was. Do you remember? Like it.
No, I don't. But I do remember that sort of happening. And it was definitely Polyvinyl because I don't have any access to like the sales site. But I think they were like, yeah, it's like sort of like flying right now. There's like hundreds sold within whatever, you know, the day or how many days just that the pre-order went up. So, and to be honest, like I wasn't that surprised. I mean, just with the sort of community and the, you know, the sort of reach that Washed Up has and has had. And this is like, again, it's like really, just really funny to think about the parallels between this and then our first like MTA book. It's like, you know, there's a core audience. And so you at least think like that core audience will be interested in this thing that you're making. And so that's, you know, you have some sort of expectation there, but I think the fun and unexpected part is just when it grows beyond that and like it just, you know, exceeds expectations. But I think like in both of our cases, there was such a core audience that, and like we are the audience, like I'm the audience of my like MTA book, you're the audience of this book. And I mean, I guess we both cross over in these things, mm-hmm. because music and design fans, but so it's like, you know, you sort of rely on the core and then when it exceeds it, it's, you know, sort of cherry on top. But I wasn't too worried about Anthology gaining some traction, at least in the beginning. But yeah, you never know what's going
to
happen.
I also like that we decided like not to do digital. I like that we mm-hmm. decided to not do Amazon and sort of really push that thing early. And I think it was more we didn't have time or we didn't know how to do the digital, but it ended up being like a thing where people were like, oh no, you have to. I think people were surprised initially, like, oh, you mean I can't get this? And I mean some people I joked with, I was like, you know, you can listen to the podcast, it's free.
I was just gonna say, it's like if you're on a device, you might as well just listen to the podcast.
Right.
But like the point is that we had this book that you could just like put in your bag and like go on the train and like sort of like skip around. Like you could just sort of, you know, start in the middle if you wanted to. It's not a linear book. Like you could just start in any interview. And I mean, obviously, you know, I at least, and I think you do have a soft spot for the printed book. So, I was excited that you wanted to also make that extension of the digital part, which is the podcast itself.
Right. Which was, you know, ended up being people didn't listen to the podcast, but bought the book, which I thought was like, I remember hearing that from someone and going like, oh, I think we're onto something. Like this is a different person. This is someone that would never listen to a podcast, but wanted to read the stories. And I actually, the one thing I really enjoyed, and I feel like you told me about this and I didn't realize it until I did it, but editing for the book versus a podcast was so interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely different. And I think you don't maybe realize it. Editing words that you read versus words that you hear, and you know, sort of like dialect and language, you can get, it's much more forgivable, I think, when you're just hearing people talk, because you know, it's just like the way I'm talking now is like if you read it on like words on paper, it probably reads in a ridiculous way. I think like editing that down to make it read smoothly and without all the, you know, intonations and whatever verbal mannerisms that we all have or that people have. And you know, it was a learning process for sure, but I like how raw I think you and like we still kept it. So that was like the good thing. Like, we still like kept in like laughs and, you know, things that just happened in the conversation to make it feel like you could still hear what you're reading. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I hope that came across.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking like when I read Eric Richter's, I'm like, that's Eric. Like when and also too, I think because of my job, I feel like I forget how long it took to sell out. Was it like 6 months or something, or 8 months or a year, whatever it was, we didn't do a reprint. I didn't have time. I think you were doing stuff, or I just was like, I think it took a lot out of me, right? We did a tour, there was like events, like I was like, yeah. I'm gonna relax for a minute and do something else. And that almost helped V2, because people were sitting there trading this thing online and trying to find it. And so that was another funny part about Volume 2, is that people couldn't get it. And so it made it kind of grow as the second one came out, which it wasn't on purpose.
Yeah, totally.
So, we had two releases. And then obviously with COVID, everyone sort of was stuck in their house, and I was doing the pod a little bit more. Everyone seemed to open up their garage and feel like they had stuff and felt nostalgic. And yeah. I think, you know, during that, I felt there was more to do. And you and I had those conversations about, God, there's probably more stuff we could do. And Matt could have a different version of this, because we'll hear from Matt on a future episode. But I just remember, you know, him and I talking about a tour of his, and I think I just kind of expressed to him how I wanted to put out books. And I said, if you write these words, I'll put it out. And he actually did it.
Yeah.
And I think I remember calling you or being like, dude, Matt wrote something. Holy shit. Like,
yeah.
This isn't just, and again, no offense to writers, but I want to hear it from the horse's mouth. I want to hear from the artist itself. So, I was really excited. And I got, obviously, to have this book that's coming out, as of today, if everyone's listening to it today or in the future, it has come out, called Red Letter Days by Matt Pryor. And, what was your initial thoughts when this kind of was coming together, or you kind of knew that it was happening? Cause I know that you were a fan as well.
Yeah. I mean, almost when you were talking about it or telling me that you were even speaking with Matt about it, I was just like, obviously I believed you, but I was also like, yeah, that's like too good to be true. Or like, that would just be an amazing thing to happen. That would be an amazing next title for you, like beyond the anthologies, but just to even have like a relationship with a person like that, or you have a band that I grew up listening to. And I was immediately very excited. And I think, yeah, when you reached out to me about it, you had already been talking with Matt, and I think he had sent you like the drafts of the chapters. And then either you or I just said, like, let's just like make something so that we can show him that it would like what it would look like as a real book. And I think I put together just like the comp of the very first draft of it, like within a day. And then I was just like, here's the cover. These are spreads. Like, let's just send it to Matt. And, you know, I don't think it was his style or vibe, but I do think it was at least seeing the words that he just typed out become, you know, it at least looked like it could become a real physical thing in a book form. It was an immediate, fast thing. And then, you know, from then until now, there's been, you know, a lot of iterations, a lot of work, and it's evolved. But I was extremely on board and happy when you first told me.
I had forgotten about that. You had did that quickly.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was like literally a day, because I was like, just get me the text and I can just like make this so fast. And, you know, I'm like in the camp of very fast design, sort of like thinking about an idea and then doing it very quickly and not sort of overthinking it. We both knew that this wasn't the real thing anyways. It was like something just to show him, like, if you really want to do this, like, we can make it happen. And I think we had proven, with anthology that we actually could make it. Like, we just did this twice. And you know, we can do the same thing with your book. So we just need you to write it and we'll take care of the rest. So I think that's what's happened.
Yeah, that was really cool. And then obviously, you know, shout out to Polyvinyl, who was so helpful early on. And like, I didn't have room for all the books in my studio apartment in Manhattan. You didn't have room for them, right? You already had your own book stuff that you were doing. And so for Polyvinyl to be like, yeah, we can ship this out. And like, that was that epic part where I was like, all this shit's coming together. I was like, oh my God. Like,
oh yeah.
I was like, holy shit. These people will help us ship it worldwide. Oh my God.
Totally. And you know, I don't know the audience who's listening to this podcast right now and what their interests are, but like, for anyone interested in self-publishing, and this is what I told you, I was like, fulfillment is almost the number one biggest headache that you have to figure out in self-publishing. Like designing the book, printing the book, like doing all that, marketing, PR. I know that it's easy, but like it's fairly manageable. But literally physically mailing hundreds, if not thousands of books, like you just don't, you can't do that by yourself and in New York City in small apartments. So, you know, that's the one lesson that we learned at Standards Manual. Like we never shipped a single book ourselves. Like we found a fulfillment center and we luckily sidestepped any massive, like just an insane, like, you know, sort of like pallets of books showing up to your front door in Brooklyn and having to figure that out. So I think once Polyvinyl, we've, you know, somehow you got us in touch with them to figure out that they could do fulfillment and distribution. Like that was the number one, I think, sort of big relief from just a logistics point of view. So anyways, if anyone's self-publishing, don't fulfill it yourself. If it's over like 500 copies, that's sort of the my threshold.
I feel like that was the, I think I remember feeling you have like this sense of relief. Like, when I was
like, it's easy now.
Yeah. It's like, and then having us, like anyone could order it around the world and like wholesale and bookstores and libraries started buying it. Right. Yeah. Like I was like, oh my God, like this is in like a library somewhere with its own, like, you know, number, like this is crazy. And that was partly because of the distro. And I think people realized, you know, a lot of people were like, why is it on Amazon? And I'm like, go to the DIY spot and buy it. And it's $3 more because of whatever shipping it is. But, you know, this is DIY. This isn't, you know, a giant place. And yeah, I think, I mean, there was a lot of people along the way that, you know, shouting out, you know, if it was Luke O'Neill doing the intro, so many of the folks that were editing and helping me with the transcriptions, Satcher from Brooklyn Vegan doing one of the intros, really, really cool. They kind of stepped out alongside that. But yeah, we kind of wrap those books up. And Matt's book, what else do you think was different about this one, other than having, you know, another human involved with their own sense of what it could be, which was which was fun to work around, I thought, because it wasn't just you and I. We had another, almost like a third party that helped. What other parts about it did you find, you know, interesting getting to this point for Red Letter Days?
I mean, this one being a memoir and not just sort of a transcript of, you know, spoken word, which like, you know, it's like the anthologies, I think like that was more, not like more mechanical, but like it kind of was. And even the way that it was designed looked like that. And it was very, I mean, it was made to almost look like it was printed out of like a, what are those, like the old 8-bit sort of printers, like the dot matrix printers, you know, that just printed like, or like it's, you know, like it's like a typewriter font. Mm-hmm. So it's made to look like very almost utilitarian and mechanical. And it's just like, you know, at the beginning of every paragraph, it's like the person's name who's talking. And then transition to this one, it's just a little bit, I mean, it's deeply and extremely personal. And not to say that, you know, what other people were talking about in anthology wasn't, but this one is just so, it's much warmer in the sense of, you know, from the personal perspectives. And I don't know, there's just like a more humanness to this one than I feel like the other one, just in sort of the nature of like what it was and sort of this translation from, yeah, a podcast to a book. This one is just like from like the heart to the page in a way, not to like sound cheesy, but it really is more of a soulful and yeah, warmer sort of approach to a book than anthology. So I think just like the choices that we made and including, you know, images at the beginning of about half of the chapters and even like the typefaces that we chose, it's much more like of a human typeface and much more warmer than a typewriter font. So it's just stuff like that that I think is different. Yeah, I would say those are sort of the main differences that I see, at least like from my point of view, when I'm thinking about designing a book, that's the big difference.
Yeah, no, I love that. And then, you know, anything else about Red Letter Days that I was thinking, like, you know, obviously having the different person, but also like involved, but then also like, this was this person's first Buck, like, this is also like, I felt like, oh my God, we can't screw this up. I mean, it's out today, but we might screw it up. But it was like more pressure that it was someone else. And I kind of felt that a lot. Like, wow, this is taking a different swing. And this is someone's, like you said, heart on the actual pages, not just me transcribing them.
No, totally. I mean, again, like, I don't think we thought about this when we were doing anthologies, but, you know, it's like 10 or so people. And it's just sort of like the supports of many people make it less scary to, I mean, you don't want to mess it up for anyone, but yeah, the pressure is not on like one single person that this is like their baby. And I think like this was Matt's baby. And so there's that pressure. It's obviously deeply personal. So you want to do it in the right way. You just want to, give it everything that you can. But I think, it was a real group effort, and like shout out to Matt Wilson as well. Like all the Matts in this project, there are many.
Ian King, sort of helping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Ian and, the guys at Polyvinyl. It's just like too many people. So, like, I think like, yes, there was a lot of pressure on like me and you, and like you in particular. Like, you're the one sort of leading the imprints, and then, I'm sort of helping whatever on the design side and gathering things. And then, Ian coming in with, writing and editing and sort of that perspective, and just sort of, I think, having this core team, which like, as I don't know, I think you're a very independent person, I'm an independent person, and like, we do things very independently, which is a good trait to have. But then I also think once you start to like really build a team and support around the project that you're doing, it just gets better and better. And just like, I think we pulled in the right people for the right thing. And yeah, everyone pulled the weight. And yeah, huge shout out to Ian for sort of taking the text and shaping it into the final thing that it is right now.
Outside of, we've got Red Letter Days, obviously there's going to be a lot more with your day job, right? That as a book designer, like, how has this, been for you? And then obviously you're a huge music fan, and then, getting to spend time on this, like, what is that? And this is not groveling. This is like just more, you could even be like, this has been a giant pain in the ass, Tom, but like, just more of like, how is it sort of, I feel like, you're also a musician, you're in a band called Shark Swimmer. Like, how is it, I felt like a lot of these things overlapped as you were doing your band stuff too.
Yeah. I'm definitely fortunate to have my professional life and then my, fun life of doing music overlap quite a bit, or at least like from time to time. So this is, one of those overlaps where working on music projects as a designer is like one of the most fun projects to work on. Like for me, I always say it's music and food. So I'm just like I'm a food person. I like eating out, I like going to restaurants and, just like exploring that world. I'm not a good chef or a person who cooks very well myself, but I appreciate that. So when we work on restaurants and like design, that's A+. And then same thing with music. And then, like us then playing shows with Shark Swimmer and just being more in that world, which like I haven't always been. I mean, I've been in that band for like 5 years. And I think before that, I was really sort of like out of the scene a little bit. I wasn't sort of like totally caught up. And I think now playing in a band for the past 5 years has integrated me a lot. And it's been
I remember us overlapping on some bands and not others. But what I loved about it was that you were sharing tunes with me that were like bands I hadn't heard. And I got stoked on that. And then when you sent me Shark Swimmer and you're like, this is mine or this is thy band, I was like, what? Like, again, I'm not saying I'm the be all end all of stuff, but like I've listened to a lot of music. It's my job. And like, this is fucking rad shit. So I was like, why have you not been playing? I think that was my response. I'm like, why haven't you been in bands? And I know that things happen and you're a drummer, so there's only so much fucking space to put a drum kit and practice space. But yeah. You were so stoked. Like I could just tell that you were so amped on this and, you got connected with really rad records recently. And, I was excited that you hadn't done it. And then you were, playing with all these bands I hadn't heard of. And so it was like opening my eyes. Like, I just thought it was like, I was like getting like residual, like band scene points. I was like, fucking, hey, I'm like understanding more because of Jesse. Thank God. you know?
Yeah.
So did
no,
you,
totally.
What was it like, you know, I mean, DIY, you guys were, you know, doing it for a while and then getting connected with Really Rad, I think was, I mean, a massive step.
Yeah. I mean, definitely like fast forwarding up to the beginning of this year is, so yeah, we recorded our first full length. So that's called Serenity, which yeah, is now out on Really Rad, but you know, we just recorded that ourselves. We did it with John Markson, who, you know, does a lot of work with Drug Church and Koyo and, you know, a bunch of other people. And I think, you know, Justin, our singer, he got in touch with him through something. I mean, Justin sort of knows everyone everywhere in like every music pocket, I feel like, definitely in New York and elsewhere. So Justin got in touch with John. We recorded it on sort of the smallest but actual budget that we possibly could to make it, you know, sound like a real album. And then, yeah, shopped it around to a, you know, a good number of people. And then, yeah, Really Rad out in Portland responded and they picked it up and, yeah, helped us release it. So that just came out, yeah, a couple weeks ago. So, yeah, a lot of releases happening between records and books. And so, yeah, I mean, this is like the most fun I think I could like possibly have is just like playing in a band, releasing albums, working with independent publishers, publishing books, and then doing also my own design work, which, like, to be fair, can be very like corporate and not sexy and not cool looking. But there's a part of me that, like, that's just what I went to school and learned and like what I studied. I studied very sort of, you know, buttoned up corporate design. And for whatever reason, I find something very satisfying about systems and things that are very strict and sort of a lot of like guidelines to things. But like the band stuff is where it can be a little bit more, not even like experimental, but looser and have much more of that emotion and feeling to it, which again, just bring it back to like Red Letter Days. I feel like that is the side that, you know, can be actually more fun and less restrictive, where Anthology, you know, that one was really like, you know, it was like academic looking and it was buttoned up. But anyway, so there's like two sides that I love to explore. And I think sometimes they're contradictory, but I actually think that's interesting. So you don't have to always do one thing all the time. And like people, when they hear Shark Swimmer and see me play, they're just like, who are you? Like, that it's just not my personality. Like, I'm a very sort of reserved, quiet. I listen to like classical and like jazz music during the day. I mean, like sort of like in the mornings, and then I'll throw on like Touche Amore sort of in the afternoon, just like lose my shit. But, and then, yeah, I'm just, I think drums are my, it's like my yoga or something. It's my practice of meditation, but in a very hot and sweaty, aggressive sort of
I manner. Love that. Yeah. I didn't even know that. We've talked on the phone for hours and hung out. Like, I see that parallel. And also too, you being a drummer is so like regimented. I feel like that's your like both personalities of your work and personal life with the band.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, like, it's funny, like Garrett, our design director at Order, I think someone was asking me like, what's my style of playing drums? And then he just answered for me and he's like, it's what you would think of him being a designer. It's like the designer translation of playing drums, which is just like very not, it's not like a very jazzy style. It's like, I try to be very tight and precise as like, and like exactly perfect every single time. So I'm not just like riffing. I wish I could, but I'm just not very good at that. And I think it's the same thing as like with design. I like have to think of an idea, then I have a process, an approach and a method, and it's very methodical. So I think my drumming is like a reflection of that also as me as a designer. I like think in grids, and also in drumming, I think in very a gridded sort of structure, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. And so my conversation with me must be absolutely annoying because I don't do that.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I'm definitely free form and come up with a thousand things and then we do one of them. But it takes a while to get there. No, that's really cool. I mean, you know, we've had the opportunity to, you know, work together. And I thought, you know, knowing about your previous work at Pentagram and then you starting Order Design was inspirational for me to see. I mean, you like left this like prestigious place and then did your own thing. And now that's successful and releasing books. It was honestly an inspiration for Washed Up Books, because I kind of saw you do that in a way that was true to you.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, again, it's like that independence that at least like I grew up with. And I think that you probably, you know, sort of share the same qualities. But I don't know. I just found I find a deep, you know, satisfaction and gratification with just going and making something and not worrying too much about like what will happen with it. I mean, I think you can't be totally oblivious to things, but I do think like the chance of it failing shouldn't be the reason you shouldn't do something. And like, that's the worst thing that could happen. It's like, okay, you put out a book and no one buys it and that sucks. But like, if you love that book or you love that project enough to do it, like the fact that you just did it, like should be enough. And then if other people like it, again, that's just like bonus points. But so that's just how I sort of feel about anything that I do. It's like, I only do things that I really am proud of or want to do with other people. So whether it's the band or, you know, books with, you know, my partner Hamish or, you know, the studio and doing order, like I at least like thought like we can help some people by doing this. And so then therefore it's like a reason to do it. And if we fail, I'll just go back and like crawl into Pentagram's office and like beg for my job back. Like that's the worst thing that could happen. So yeah. So I'm glad that resonated with you. It's and like I try to make that very clear to people. It's like, if you want to put out a book, like just do that. Like, and there's so many resources that allow you to do it at this point. There's no, like, you, and same with, like, I think about it with music, like you don't have to, I mean, obviously I'm all for record labels and, but you don't need like the majors anymore. Like, you know, you could find an indie and like have them put it out, or you could just put your stuff on Spotify and on YouTube or whatever, release it, but make an Instagram page. And like, if people like it, they'll play it and you can go tour and do your thing. So it's same with like publishing, like you don't need a major publisher to create a book anymore to have it out in the world. Like, you could do it yourself. You could do it on Amazon if you want to do that. You could do it in so many ways. It's just like there's limitless choices. So anyways, that was my rant on independent anything.
I mean, you just fucking finished the podcast. That was fucking great, Jason.